This is Will's Band of the Week for July 22nd, 2012. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett.
Hey.
And we're waiting to see if Chris calls in. Apparently he has family responsibilities. Hey, something's ringing. I'm out, got a house full of neighborhood kids.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll have to make do without Chris. Chris wanted it to be known, though, the last two times we attempted to schedule the podcast this week, he was available. So I think he wanted that on record. So we're not going to just blame Chris for this one, right?
Right.
So you and Chris then will have your, hopefully, your update on the Pitchfork Music Festival next week, right?
Yeah, it's been a week now. So I'll try to, that's kind of the, that's how long my memories usually last.
Right.
And so I'm going to be kind of taxing my memory to talk about it next Thursday, but
right,
I'll do my best.
Yeah. So we'll rock on. Hopefully we can get Chris back next week.
Yeah. The last one before your vacation, right?
Right. Exactly. I still think you guys should just record something like on your phone and like put it up there.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fun. So.
All right. Well,
that remains to be seen. So
we'll see.
I'm going to debut a new exciting feature for the contact information. You ready for it?
Yeah, let's hear it.
You can contact this podcast by sending an email to willsband@yahoo.com or by posting a comment on the website willsband.net. You can also contact us through the social media. That would be Facebook or Twitter, and you can look us up and find us there pretty easily. And you can download the podcast every week on iTunes or the Stitcher app. And of course, with iTunes, you can subscribe. And we always recommend subscribing. Oh, the guy's doing the backing vocals now. That's some 38 Special karaoke for you.
Yes, yeah, that was quite a find.
Yeah. I thought we were talking about how Spotify has, what is it, 15 million tracks or something at your fingertips? So it just occurred to me about a week ago, maybe they've got 38 Special karaoke. Well, because didn't you mention that on the last podcast that,
yeah,
that like they've got karaoke versions
remotely popular,
yeah,
in karaoke form,
right?
Yeah,
you don't need like one of those dedicated karaoke machines anymore, right?
No, you don't.
You could all you need is you know, you could do this if you I suppose you have to pay royalties or whatever, right? But if you had a bar and you wanted to do karaoke night, you could just load up an iPod with you know, a whole bunch of this stuff on from Spotify, and then you could just make a list of what you've got. You'd be rocking, right?
Right. That's a good idea.
Yeah, but do you have to then pay like $5 for like every song that you somebody?
No,
how's that
I
work?
Mean, if you're a bar or like, you know, at the coffee shop, we pay ASCAP and BMI.
Yeah,
who manage the rights for like most artists, and
how do they figure out how much you have to pay?
I don't know how they figure it out, but we end up paying like, I think about $600 a year.
But is it basically like a flat fee based on like the number of hours that you're playing music?
I don't know how they do it. You know,
but it's not like you don't have to like,
I mean, even if you're not going to play, music in there, but you have live bands, even occasionally, they're going to make you pay because they're performing covers.
Right. So this is basically just the fee for the fact that you generally do this. It's not like they don't license it so specifically that you have to like report like each time you have live music or anything like that.
No.
Yeah.
No, not at
all. That would create an administrative nightmare, right?
It I mean, would.
If you had to, like, you'd have to make a list of every cover that the person played in there, and then so that artist would get the royalties, right? They'd get like the 50 cents, and it would cost more to make the list.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we could be like, you know, we had 38 Special on karaoke version for about a minute and a half, and then somebody shut off the power on us.
Yeah.
to stop it. So how much do we owe in that case? That'd be very, very hard to keep track of that.
Yeah, that would be. Or what if you didn't have the authorization to play the Karaoke 38 special? Like, federal agents would swoop in, right? Turn that off immediately, right? They'd have, like,
well,
weapons
with
them.
That's what they'd be there. Yeah, that would be the instructions that they'd have. But then they'd get there, and then their heads would start bobbing.
Right.
Their feet would start tapping.
That's right.
They would forget all about that. They'd go up and order a beer.
Yeah.
What was that little bloop sound? Like a little Skype sound. Did you hear that?
It was Chris. He said he went offline and then he came back online. So I don't know. He said, he's probably sitting there with his laptop surrounded by like 10 kids.
Right.
He's probably like, you know, doing tweets for work or something.
Right.
But if we hear from him, I don't mind having like 10 neighborhood kids in the background. Do you?
I don't mind.
Yeah. But it might distract him from his cogent music analysis. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, it's unfortunate, but I must report this.
And now it's time for the death of the week.
John Lord, the keyboard player for Deep Purple, died this past week.
How old was he?
I think 71.
Yeah.
And, you know, Deep Purple. Remember Deep Purple? They were like, that's like 70s rock if there ever was, right?
Right.
70s arena rock. And they, and you know, you think of bands like classic rock bands and heavy metal bands. You don't really think of keyboards that much. But this was the era when they really did have keyboards. Like, it was actually an integral part of the sound of
right.
the band. So it's not like he's like some side guy. He's considered like one of the main guys in the band. And so I found some Deep Purple. Now, the obvious song to play would be Smoke on the Water, but I'm not going to be that obvious. You know, that is one of those things where, like, that riff, right? Smoke on the Water. It's like, talk about bang for your buck, right? Somebody
right.
writes, like, the simplest thing that you could ever write, and then it becomes, like, this monster hit, right? Now, I guess it was actually a song, not just a riff, but you think of it as, like, just kind of you think of that song as being the riff, right?
Right.
And, you know, how many guitar music stores could you go in? Like, right now, somebody would be probably playing that, right? That's the first thing you could play. You don't have to be able to play a guitar at all, and you can play that riff.
Right.
I mean, I used to play it when I was, like, whatever age, you know. And all you had to do is just play the middle two strings on the guitar and have it, you know, kind of good level of distortion, and you're there. And it sounded kind of just like it. Yeah. So there's a song by Deep Purple that I think I had the single when I was probably like 11 years old or something. And I really liked this song at this age. And it's kind of creative. A lot of the Deep Purple stuff is, you know, old, I don't know, I used to call it sludge rock. You know, it's kind of, it's that 70s rock where you can only go so far with it. But this was one I liked. It's called Woman from Tokyo.
We'll be right back.
kind of slows down, and there's like this psychedelic kind of slowdown thing in the middle, which is kind of cool. But
yeah, that's Ritchie Blackmore, right?
The guitar player, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But notice the keyboard in there is pretty prominent, and it's like a it's like a back and forth between the guitar and the keyboard.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. That's classic rock right
there.
Yes,
it is. That was a little before my time.
Yeah.
Like the Ritchie Blackmore band that I was familiar with was Rainbow.
Right.
Remember them?
Yeah. Did he ever have Ronnie James Dio as a singer? I think he might have.
I don't know. That was a really short time in my life when I was into that.
I think they were called Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow, and then they were just called Rainbow.
Right.
They had to tie in Ritchie Blackmore so they people would know that they're supposed to buy it because this guy used to be in Deep Purple. Yeah. That's the old classic rock.
Yes, it is. Deep Purple. They're given credit for being kind of the proto-metal band, you know, like one of the pioneers of that sound.
Yeah, and and I'm going to transition into this, and you might have to turn off your speakers for this, but if you want to talk about sort of like bookends, right, of the metal era, this is the beginning, and I think this album, the 25th anniversary of which just came up this week. I think of this as kind of the end of that era, and I know what your position is on it, so we can talk about that a little bit more, but here's another riff for you. I'll cut off Axl Rose there. We don't need to hear him. But that's Guns N' Roses, of course, the billion seller, whatever it was, Appetite for Destruction. It turned out they did have an Appetite for Destruction, right? Because they basically like just flamed out really quickly, and this album kept selling forever. But what did they have? They had like one other album, one or two other albums, and then there was that one that you know, went unreleased for 20 years, and then it was a big letdown because it wasn't that great anyway. And but we were talking about this the other night, and you were saying that you just hated this from the beginning. You always hated Guns N' Roses.
So yeah, I think what it was that, you know, up until that, when did this come out? Well, 25 years ago.
Right.
So it's like 87.
87.
I was living on Gorham. I was in college. And this was really the first heavy metal band that got any kind of positive critical, you know, notices. And you know, I was Joe college rock guy,
yeah,
and very anti heavy metal. And when this came out, and you know, people started liking it and talking about it, and you know, serious music writers were writing about it, I just got annoyed immediately. Like, this cannot be. We must stop this.
Yeah.
I just didn't like the whole idea of it.
I thought of it as being kind of the last flame out of the hair metal, right?
Yeah.
There were all these terrible, terrible hair metal bands in the mid 80s, like Cinderella and Poison. And, you know, basically this is like pop metal. This is a style that my son likes to say, that he thinks it's funny that they even call this heavy metal. Maybe we were talking about this before, but
yeah.
You know, it's sort of pop metal, right? It's like pop music with louder guitars and bad boy attitude, right?
Right.
So these guys were like, I think it was like it got turned over to Metallica after this, I think, right? And there wasn't any more like of this real style. And so I was still, you know, I had been like a metal fan for long enough, and I kind of thought, okay, they kind of kicked ass on this album. It's kind of like Van Halen or something, you know?
Yeah.
And then, but I do have to say that the, you know, the personalities and the whole persona of the band was pretty bad and just got worse and worse over the years. I mean, these guys now, you try to read like anything that Axl Rose says in the media, and it's just like almost unbearable. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, it's like these guys are, they're probably lucky to be alive still. You know?
Right.
So, yeah, but I thought
so
it was
what
interesting.
What is the status of these guys? Are they still together? Or?
I think there's some deal where like there's a Guns N' Roses that doesn't have the singer in it, you know, Axl yeah. Rose, because then he's pissed at all of them. So then he tours with a different band and he plays the same songs. And then they
right.
it's like, oh, God. And isn't Tommy Stinson in Guns N' Roses?
Is he really?
Yeah.
The old bassist for the
Replacements. So now that's a step down, right? I mean,
big time. Oh, are you kidding? More bleeps and bloops.
Oh, yeah. That's some other random person who... I don't have very many people in my Skype address book, but somebody that's in my Skype address book came online, so it had to tell me. I guess this is like Facebook, right? Where you have to like constantly know what all your friends are doing, and you have to right. know where they are and whether they're available at that very moment, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, Guns N' Roses. So, 25 years. Does that seem like a long time? I think it seems like right about the right amount of time.
Seems about right, yeah.
Yeah, it does seem like a really long time ago
yeah.
that people were actually, like, seriously listening to Guns N' Roses. But I think Chris was kind of into it, right? We'll have to hear what he has to say about this.
He's into it enough that, I mean, he'll go way out of his way to see a Guns N' Roses cover band.
Oh, that's right.
That's like his thing. He knows all the songs, knows all the... all the references. He's.
I forgot
know,
he was
not
that
like an
into
active
it.
Fan right now.
But he was like what 12 when this came out or something. So then we can excuse yeah. him for that, right?
Yeah. How old would he have been? He's going to turn 40 next year, I think.
So maybe it was 14.
He's like, yeah, 14, 15, whatever.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, my input's very short. Don't like him.
I remember now Chris saying that he had gone to see one of these Guns N' Roses cover bands. And it's the classic thing. They always have, like, the name of the band is like the name of one of the songs, right?
Right.
I think there was a band called Mr. Like, Brownstone, which is one right. of their songs. There probably is another band called Paradise City.
Oh,
they don't
sure.
want to be too obvious. So they're not going to call the band Welcome to the Jungle or Sweet Child O' Mine, because you can't.
Somebody probably did.
You got to go with a deep... considered a deep cut, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Or how about just Appetite for Destruction? That would be
it's kind of an obvious one, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't be so bad. Yeah. I wonder what band has the most tribute bands. I guess it's obviously got to be the Beatles, right? Remember that band called the Britons?
Yeah.
It was like they were really well known. I don't think I ever saw them because I wasn't really into the Beatles back then, but I bet they were pretty good.
Yeah, I saw them.
You know, because usually bands that do this like are really meticulous about studying the band, and so they can be pretty darn good, really.
Right.
I've been a little bit tempted. There's been a Pink Floyd band that's come around here, and also a Led Zeppelin band, and I've been kind of curious, but I have never gone to see either of those two. But I think they've come and like actually drawn pretty good crowds.
Right.
So I don't know. A long time ago, I would have been like, I would have totally scoffed at that. But now I'm kind of thinking, why not? It's music. Have fun. Right.
Right. There is that one Bob Dylan cover band.
I think I know what you're
going to say.
Man. Hey, that leads into our next topic, right? We went and saw the free show by Cloud Cult on the street in Madison, which is kind of cool. They started this series.
Really cool.
They have bands for free, and I guess they're just doing this for what, 4 weekends or 6 weekends or something? Or
something
six
like
Friday nights. Set up a big stage at the end of the street, so it's like one full block. And what's cool, I was telling you this, I think this is cool, that the block is on a hill and so the stage they put down at the bottom, which makes the whole, makes it easier to see.
Right.
And, you know, we were up reasonably close. So, and I thought Cloud Cult was a pretty good band for that type of an event. They're kind of enthusiastic, and they're all pounding on drums and stuff, and they're,
right.
yeah.
they were very enthusiastic and you know, just like you know their music more than I do, but you don't know it as well as half the people there seem to.
There's a lot
of
people
behind me. Did you hear that guy?
Oh yeah, the guy's like singing along.
He knew every word to every song, and even like, you know, saying with the exact same inflection that the other guy did.
Right, right.
And there seemed to be a lot of that. A lot of real hardcore fans.
Yeah, they totally have hardcore fans. This is, I think, the third time I've seen them, and every time there's been people singing along. And you know, I kind of don't really like it when people sing along. I like the fact that they're enthusiastic, and I give them credit for that. But I really don't want some guy right behind me, like, singing out the lyrics at the top of his lungs, you know. And that the first time I saw them, that happened like to the extreme, because it was at the High Noon, and there's this guy like right behind us, and he's like yelling the words, and it's like, you know, I don't want to hear, you know, your singing like at an equal level as the singer from the band.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I don't know, I guess I have mixed feelings though, because I think it's cool that they have such a devoted following and people are just totally into it. So this is a band from Minneapolis, and I've probably, well, they're not, actually they are not from Minneapolis. They are generally from Minnesota originally, and now I believe that most of them still live in that area of, you know, not too far from the Twin Cities in Minnesota, but the singer and his wife live on a farm in Viroqua, Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
So they have
That's wild.
A Wisconsin connection now. Yeah.
Where is Viroqua? That's one of those places I hear about, but I never.
Yeah, I think
I don't really know where that is.
I think if you just go west toward the Mississippi River, you kind of hit it somewhere over there.
Okay, so it's quite a ways, right?
It's probably 2 hours from Madison. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So and they're going to have more of these, and but they are not like indie rock bands, really, right? They're sort of like R&B and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
So, but hey.
Yeah, and everybody was kind of agreeing on, this was on Friday night,
mm-hmm.
About how, you know, the cities like Madison will fund these studies to try to figure out, you know, how to get more, young people in, you know, the technological fields to move downtown and occupy these condos and then have hip restaurants and little grocery stores and stuff, like, you know, how to foster that kind of a city,
right?
You know, kind of a feeling of city, and something like this. I have no idea why the city of Madison wouldn't be like, you know, from the first week in June all the way up until the end of September, we're going to have this every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I think the whole thing is really, really cool.
It's like the younger and hipper version of the concerts on the square, right?
Right. Yeah, instead of concerts for squares, this would be like concerts for, you know, non-squares.
Right. Rockers on the square.
So. Yeah.
Yeah,
next
this is what?
The
this
Ghost
is
Ghost Band, which I guess is like a, it's like a new, you know, one of these R&B soul type things.
Uh-huh.
Like Kings Go Forth. So that'd be fun.
That would be
fun for the whole family. I think I'll bring Wilson next week. I think he would like it.
Yeah, not a bad idea at all.
Yeah.
So we were going to talk about these bands that you guys saw at the Pitchfork Music Festival.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're going to hold those off till next week.
Oh, man. So we might as well then go right into the feature. Is that right?
Yeah. I have this list I was telling you before we started recording. I'm maintaining this list of a whole bunch of different bands that I've been listening to that haven't found their way up to the top, because you know how it is. You're always fighting for that chance to be on the Will's Band of the Week podcast. Once you hit that, it's like a career milestone. So
right.
Some of these bands I'm sure would just love to do it, to make it onto our podcast. But I told you guys about this. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to this band that sounds kind of like Pavement. But they're called Boxer the Horse, and they're from Prince Edward Island. You know where that is?
I looked it up. Yeah, it's like in the Maritime provinces.
It's the easternmost part of Canada, right?
Right.
And it's actually an island. And somebody else came online.
Aunt Gladys again, getting on and off of Skype.
Yep. My wife had an Aunt Gladys
Did she really?
Yeah, I think we have an Aunt... God, is it Aunt Gladys or Aunt Julia? One of them has this cookbook, and it's just classic. It's like this... Chris is calling. You know, let's see. How do we do this? Hello?
Hey, my house cleared out, so...
Hey, what a deal.
I can jump in for a cameo.
All right. So, well, I was going to talk about Boxer the Horse, but why don't we go back now that you're here?
Oh.
And we can go back into our Pitchfork Music Festival discussion.
Oh, yeah. What'd Barrett have to say about that?
Nothing, because we were waiting for you.
Oh.
So we have said nothing. All we know, the listeners only know that you guys went. That's all. You guys went to the Pitchfork Music Festival.
Indeed, we did.
I think I have a way that I can lead into this, okay?
All right.
I want to show how smooth I am as a podcaster. You guys were down there in Chicago, and you're in like this gigantic crowd of people. And it's like 90 degrees and, you know.
90. Okay. Well north of that.
Make it 100.
Yeah.
It was hot, right? And I was here in fourth bedroom studios in the comfort of home with the air conditioning on, watching some of the live feed. And I don't know if you guys watched. I mean, I think they put those videos up after the fact. But mm-hmm. it's amazing how good it is. It's like the picture is really good and the sound quality is unbelievable. And to be able to mix live sound, they must have some really good geek guys who do that. So here I was watching it, and I'm like, hey, I could record some of this. So here we go, live from the Pitchfork Music Festival. Listen to this. Real Estate live from the Pitchfork Music Festival. Were you guys in the audience for that, or were you watching somebody else?
Is Barrett talking? I can't hear Barrett at all.
I can't hear him either. I think he got cut off. It says on hold.
Do you need to call me back?
Hey, wait a minute. Was Barrett on? When you got on the line right away, was Barrett there? Wasn't he
no.
talking then? Oh, he got cut off right away. Okay, let's see. We got to get him on.
Yeah, let's try see. Calling him back.
He's sitting there lonely now, feeling like really rejected. Okay, add to call. Here we go.
Hello.
Hey, you're there.
Yes.
Sorry about that. Did
That's
you ever
okay.
hear Chris?
No.
Oh, see, he called. And I am talking to Chris, thinking that you're still on the line. But when I answered the call from Chris, I was, you unbeknownst to me, I had cut you off.
I went like on hold. Was he on Skype or was he on,
yeah.
like on the phone?
He was on Skype. Okay, let's see. We just have to add. So I had to like get rid of all the... This is going to work now. I think we're good.
All right, everybody here?
Okay, Barrett
we
there.
We are here.
Awesome.
Okay, we have all of us now. And okay, so this is what happened. Chris called, and when I answered Chris's call, it put Barrett on hold, but I didn't hit the add to call button. So it's my Skype, my lack of skills on Skype, unfortunately, that caused that problem. But Barrett, this is what you missed, okay? We just played an excerpt of Real Estate live from the Pitchfork Music Festival.
Uh-huh.
And I was commenting about how it's really pretty darn good. The sound quality is really good. So you guys were in this 100-degree weather, and I was in the comfort of my fourth-bedroom studios here watching. So did you guys see Real Estate?
We did.
How was the sound from the audience perspective?
I thought the sound for the entire thing was really good. They do a pretty good job of keeping bands from playing at the same time. There's like two stages that are near each other, and then one that's a little bit of a walk away. And there are never two bands playing at the same time in the stage near each other. So only at one point did we hear a little bleed over from another stage where somebody was kind of doing a sound check.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it sounded really good. And it's really well coordinated, too. I think we lost Chris.
You still there, Chris?
I'm okay. Still there. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. It was just my Skype again.
It was so well coordinated, in fact, that the last two bands we saw, which were Beach House and Vampire Weekend, and Beach House stopped, and Vampire Weekend was playing inside of a minute, right, Chris? I mean, they just well choreographed.
We wheeled around from watching one stage. We just turned right around, and we were pretty close to the stage where Vampire Weekend was playing, and they just jumped right in.
Yeah.
So how are the logistics okay? When you look at the crowd on a video, it looks pretty massive. So it kind of looks like it would be kind of hard to get around and get near the stage.
The whole thing was so much easier than I could have even imagined. Like driving there, we parked closer than, like, you can't park that close to go to a Madison Mallards game. We had a free parking spot. Like, seriously, you could throw a football from our car and hit the festival grounds. It was unreal.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah. And it was free. Getting around was super easy. You know, the only thing that was a little bit of a pain was the pizza place.
That's true.
Right? Chris got a sausage and a pepperoni, and it took like 25 minutes. And then you're like, you know what? Screw it. Just give me the cheese. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
People back there with the ovens. It's like, you know, keep making the pizzas because there's 1,000 people waiting in line.
Yeah.
It's almost like they were sitting there like, hey, do we need to? Should we make some more pizzas? Yeah.
Yeah. You
keep
should
making them.
So, music wise, well organized. Maybe could use a little more help on the concessions, huh?
Yeah. I think music wise, we went on the best day because we looked at the. We looked at the schedules for a couple of the other days, and it was pretty mixed. But there was something pretty consistently all day that we wanted to see. So
yeah,
I was pleasantly surprised by a few bands that I had never seen and didn't really know anything about. Like we went to go see the Ty Segall Band, who I'd never heard and thought they were great. And then we went to see a San Francisco band called The OCs.
Mm-hmm, I've heard of them.
Yeah, and just put on a great live show. I mean, just instantly likable, and I was a little surprised that the OCs was so as packed as it was, and but now I can see why. I think they're actually more well known than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we should play something by these bands. The Ty Segall Band has a new album called Slaughterhouse.
Yes.
So. Is there anything in particular that we should play? I've run through this maybe one time through or one and a half times, so I don't really have a track to pick.
I would go with song number 2. I believe it's called I Bought My Eyes.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty rocking.
Yeah, see, that's right up my alley. That's, you know, it's hard rock that's got, you know, kind of a almost a Beatles-y melody. You got the ooh-oohs going on in there.
Yeah.
And right as we were walking away from that show, Barrett's like, that is, you know, just absolute perfect outdoor festival kind of music, just to get everybody going.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That was those two slots we saw the OCs and then Ty Segall. Most of both sets, and that, you know, hour and a half there was one of the highlights for sure. I've got the whole lineup of everything that we saw to run it down. I started off with Dirty Beaches, who we talked about on the podcast last year. There weren't a lot of people there at that time. It was 1 o'clock, and it was good, but I mean, it's certainly not for everybody, and it's sort of a curious choice for an outdoor music fest, you know.
I mean, but not a bad opener, though. I think it just, you know, just kind of gets everybody started.
Right. So I liked it. He had a guitarist, and then he was just sitting down playing the keyboard, and, you know.
So no drummer?
I don't think he had a drummer.
No, it was just him a drum machine, on his computer. Like, and, yeah.
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 Then we went from there. Next band we saw was Ice Age. Which
that's the band I was gonna say you guys should go see.
Yeah,
yeah.
They're like these 19 and 20 year old Danish punk rockers, and they had some equipment and attitude problems.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, like the guy's amp blew out after about, I don't know, but two songs, and the singer, all of them, they just kind of moped around on stage nobody came up to the microphone and was like, I don't know, he'd like tell a couple of stories or something, say something like, hey, everybody, sorry that you're sitting there and we're not playing any music. It was weird. And then they played another song and a half and it happened again. And we were like, let's get out of here. But
Well, yeah, I mean, they're like 19-year-old guys, and they're clearly like playing the role of, you know, badass hard rockers and moping around the stage, and just like they're so world weary and all this kind of stuff. And it's just like, you know, so many people have done this so much better than you have.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point he like flicked a cigarette into the crowd and said like, "Go home" or something, and it's just like,
That was not.
And they weren't that. I mean, they weren't that good. They're not very groundbreaking. And Barrett looked at me during the show and was like, "You know, the drummer is the highlight of this band, and without him, they'd actually be pretty terrible." So,
I liked their album. I would have had hope for them. Maybe I would have been more disappointed because of their live performance. But their album is actually pretty good.
Yeah, the second time their amp went out, we just walked off because somebody else was playing that we wanted to go see. So,
yeah.
I think that might have been when we left to go see the OCs. By the way, if you wanted to play an OCs song.
Yeah, let's do it.
The name of the band is spelled T-H-E-E space O-H space S-E-E-S. So like the OCs spelled out.
Yeah.
And they have a song on their most recent album called Dead Energy that I would go with.
All right. I just happen to have that right here.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's rocking.
Yeah, just put on a great live show. They're almost, I'd almost compare them to like a more frantic, like B-52s kind of sound or something like that.
Yeah, that guy does have a little Fred Schneider thing in there.
Yeah.
That's from their most recent album, correct?
Yeah, it's like a split EP thing with some other band called Total Control.
On the way home, Chris and I started playing another one that I had heard before. Because before the show, I said, I don't really know about these guys. I'm not that into it. The album before this one is not good. And it doesn't sound like that either. It's remember that, Chris? It was just, like, terrible.
Oh, we yeah. Thought,
like, we're like, wait, is this this can't be the same band. But it is. So
right.
Be very careful if you're going to go out and buy something. Do not get the one that looks like a Play School phone on the front.
There's another one. There's another one called Carrion Crawler that's actually really good. It's got a song on there called "The Dream," which we saw them play live, and it was catchy enough for me to recognize it when I heard it on the album as a one that they played live. So, they might be hit or miss, but what I've heard so far, I've liked.
Yeah, well, I think I told you guys a story before about seeing the XX at Lollapalooza. This is a band that is not meant to be playing on a hot, sunny afternoon in the summer, you know? It's right. Just like, no. I mean, they need to be in the dark. So by contrast, these two bands we've played, that's the kind of style you want in your outdoor music festival, right?
Well,
right.
Moving through the day, we actually we saw Beach House.
Yeah, now how playing. Did that come? They probably should be in the dark, too.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, too. I mean, they were really oddly placed, too, because they were playing between Arab Music, who's like a DJ and, you know, plays upbeat techno style of stuff, and Vampire Weekend, which are upbeat. And so they sandwiched Beach House in between, and just in context, it just seemed really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. It kind of, I mean, the sun was going down, and... there were times when I was like, you know, this is just about, because at that time I was kind of like taking a little break, like sitting on the grass, and it was just sort of like, let's everybody chill out here for a little bit. It's been a long day. Headliner's on next. Let's listen to this pleasant music, and then we'll all turn around and see the headliner. You know, they kind of had that. So, like, on a personal level, I kind of needed a little chill out time.
Well, especially after Arab Music, which was... I mean, just an assault on the senses for a good 45 minutes, where your ears are just pummeled by beats, which I didn't really mind at all until Barrett's new favorite rappers came on at the end.
Chief Keef and Lil Reese came out.
Were they like special guests or something?
Yeah, apparently I don't know where I heard about this guy, but like when I got back into the car, I went on Twitter. I'm like, I'm gonna find out who that was. And it was Chief Keef, and he's a 16-year-old Chicago guy who's been like he's been in prison, and you know he's like first resisting arrest and assault and battery or whatever. So that you know he's like he's got some cred. He's cool for these things. And can you imagine like being if he's like going to classes like you know this guy's like they're talking about him like he's the. He is the king of Chicago hip hop right now.
Hmm.
And like, Jay-Z remixed his one song that he sang there, detailing the things that he doesn't like. Right?
Yeah. It's like, probably a lot of things he doesn't like.
What can I think? I mean, as Chris pointed out, it's a really short list. So he's a pretty happy guy, but he doesn't like snitches.
Yes.
He doesn't like thirsty bitches.
Correct.
And he doesn't like, some of the things we can't even say.
Right.
So offensive.
There's the N-word, which he used frequently.
Right, with the modifier of the F-word in front of it. Like,
yeah.
Well, I don't know what that is exactly. He does not like that.
So there are three things that he doesn't like, and just the whole song is them just saying it over and over and over again. And it's just unbelievably banal and insulting. And it's funny because you have an almost all white crowd there.
Yeah.
And these guys come out and they didn't really know what they were supposed to do. Should we be cheering this? Because these guys are talking about how they don't like snitches, which means like people who kill people don't go to prison.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know. I don't know if the crowd was down with the non-snitching culture.
Yeah.
But it was really awkward there for about 15, 20 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
And then at another stage, we didn't really see this guy, but apparently Kendrick Lamar is another big up-and-coming hip-hop star, and he's from Compton. And we found out later that Lady Gaga was there. Like, they maybe that's even his girlfriend or something. I don't know. But, you know, reading the next day about this, you know, some of the writers were talking about how what an incredible show this was. And, you know, there was all this anticipation in the air and everybody's all excited. As a participant, I didn't feel that. Did you, Chris?
Well,
you yelling over like you were sitting by a tree.
I was sitting by a tree, and you went to go see if there was a seat over there by Kendrick Lamar. And just in the distance, all I could hear was one person going, "What? What? What? What?" And I'm like, "Somebody answer the man's question already, for God's sake!"
Oh man,
I think that was his single. What?
Yes. But had I known Gaga was there, maybe I would have gone check it out. But no, I was. Yeah. Busy sucking down a vitamin water to stay hydrated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Those were mercifully inexpensive, all that stuff. Like the water and the vitamin water. A bottle and $3.
It's funny when you're young and go to shows like that, like there's some dangerous aspect, like element where like, well, try not to get a boot in the head or try not to get knifed or try not to get too drunk and pass out or something. And now here we are at our age and it's just like, stay hydrated.
Right. Exactly. Like make sure you don't bring any drink tickets home. You know?
Yeah. Oh,
I guess I better go get two mineral waters and a water.
That's right. It would be
my five tickets.
It would be tragic if I left a dollar on the table there.
Right. Yeah. But
boy, though, at 100 degrees, people could really get fried. I was thinking, man, oh man.
Jay, and then we haven't even mentioned the fact that we went to see the Men.
Yes.
And they played a pretty underwhelming set, if I'm being honest.
So they were better in the. It's funny because you saw them in a venue of 99 people, and then you saw them with whatever 20,000, whatever they have.
Yeah, the crowd was actually really light there. We were looking straight into the sun trying to watch them, which was kind of a bummer, and it was really hot. And they started off with five songs that were pretty underwhelming, so at that point we just left. Who did we wanted to go see somebody else that was playing. Oh, Real Estate was just starting.
And we went to Real Estate, right. The Men was between Ty Segall and Real Estate.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to know that you can go back and forth to these bands, because like I said, when you watch it, it looks like it's packed in tight.
Yeah, I mean, we saw nine of the, whatever, 15 bands. And not just, I'm not counting, like, Kendrick Lamar. Like, you know, staying as long as we wanted to at each thing. It was so well-organized and civilized and easy to get around. And small.
Wow.
You know? I mean, they could easily have this at, I said James Madison Park here in Madison. That's an exaggeration. But you could have it at, whatever, you know, Dane County Fairground, for sure.
I would have
a lot of space left over.
I was at, you know, my long term summer planning with all the kids' activities and stuff. I was thinking about taking Grant to one day of this, but then I had a wedding to participate in on Saturday, so that fell right into the middle of it all. So, yep. Anyway, but I like hearing these encouraging reports because. Might have to check that out in the future. And you haven't talked about Vampire Weekend. So, like, I saw just a tiny bit of it on the feed. So, what was it like? You know, they haven't had an album now for a year and a half. Do they still have, like, can they still get a crowd enthused?
I would say yes. I mean, they admitted that they hadn't played. I don't think they played in, like, a year. You know what they said? Like, it's been forever.
Yeah.
And, so they started off almost a little bit tentative, maybe, but after a short time, the night was getting cooler and the sun was going down. It was a huge crowd, and I think they were really enjoying it. And the crowd really was eating it up. it was a different crowd than there was earlier in the day, for sure. You know, like if you saw somebody wearing a basketball jersey, mm-hmm. it would be less ironic at the Vampire Weekend show than, you know, or a baseball hat.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's funny. Early in the day, I said to Barrett, I said, well, let's try to pick the people who are here that just to see Vampire Weekend. And then he looked at me. He's like, you realize people are saying that about us right now.
Look at the two nerds.
Yeah, we clearly look like the Vampire Weekend crowd. I'm like, yeah, you're probably right.
Yep.
But we must have looked at least a little not like narcs, because there were a lot of people sparking up joints and bongs all around us.
Right, just a pretty much an open-air drug market, which, I mean, you know, I've been a concert goer for many years, and so it didn't surprise me at all, but it's just like, if any two people in this entire concert looked like police informants, it would be me and Barrett.
Yeah.
And they're just right next to it, just like blazing it up, like, fine.
Yeah.
More power to you, whatever.
Wow. All right. Does that wrap up the report?
I think so.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got in, we got out. Everything was just about as good as could be.
That's good. You know, I'm glad at least two of us went to a summer music festival. So, I got a thing coming up in a couple weeks, musical event when I'm on the vacation. I think I mentioned it to Barrett. So it'll be fun to take that one in and report back on it. So,
yes.
But let's leave the listeners wondering who that is going to be, right? Just think it's going to kill him now. It's going to be
wondering now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, why don't you guys indulge me as long as we're on the air, and I'll talk about this band called Boxer the Horse. And before we got Chris on the line, we mentioned that these guys are from Prince Edward Island. So if you're from Prince Edward Island, like, that is not a large area. It's like the whole population. I looked it up and I forgot now, but the whole population is like, you know, Madison is like the whole island, I think.
Yeah.
You know? So they probably, you know, could move to Brooklyn and have like triple the audience. But they're staying true to their roots, as far as I know, and still living in Prince Edward Island. But I don't know, I just got to listening to this album. It kind of caught me. And did you guys get a chance to listen to this at all?
Yeah.
Does it sound too much like Pavement?
It sounds a lot like Pavement. It also sounds a little like the Kinks, and I can't take credit for discovering that. I did read that, but when I started thinking about it afterwards, it sounds, yeah.
I mean, I think the guy has a slightly slacker Malcolmus delivery that makes them sound like Pavement, but also, you know, guitar interplay-wise and stuff, they sound a little bit like him, too.
Right.
But I think they have two albums now, and this is the second one. It's called French Residency, and I guess, you know, people in Canada, they think about French residency, right? Because they're surrounded by French-speaking people.
Yeah.
So there's my naive interpretation of the name of the album. Well, here's a song that I like. It's called Sentimental Oriental.
Curse out the G and T.
That's Boxer the Horse. They probably could pick a better name, but hey, I'm not going to hold it against them.
Yeah, that's not my favorite name. Another animal thing. I think we need to get away from that.
There are quite a few horses.
Yeah, is this the year of the horse?
There have been horses in prior years, right?
Yeah.
There's like, well, who do we get? Should we look it up now?
Well, you got like horse feathers. You've got Sparkle Horse, Band of Horses.
Neil Young.
And Crazy
Neil Young
Horse.
And Crazy Horse, sure. Yeah.
You got the ponies. Does that count?
Oh, there's a band called Ann Horse.
Remember Ann them? Horse?
Yeah. There's also the Dad Horse Experience. So I think now I'm really getting down to the way down on the list on Spotify. There's a Neon Horse, Wild Horse, Iron Horse, Night Horse, On a Pale Horse, Yankee Horse, Drunk Horse. Oh, my God, this is crazy. All right, well, anyway, this is Boxer the Horse. So, Barrett, did you listen enough to make a pick?
I did. I'm going to pick number 10. That one's called T-Rex.
You know, it's funny. That was going to be my next pick, too. So here we go. T-Rex. Never leave home without your sunglasses. Tired and ashamed of your yellow eyes. Winter kept us warm. Under such bright skies. You could be my rock if you played piano. Ask no questions, tell no lies. Spread your summer break in bed. Underneath the hood of security from the roof. What else could you say when they asked permission to photograph you without your clothes? Where were you in 68? Sooner, Pavel, or Flash? That's Boxer the Horse, probably the only band that you know now that's from Prince Edward Island.
Don't act like a slut on Saturday night. Music with a message.
Right.
I don't know if that's
be a public service announcement.
Right. I don't know if that's implicit consent to be a slut every other night of the year.
That's true.
Of the week, yeah.
Yeah. That's not going to
you don't want to intimate that.
I'm going to admit that that's maybe not quite as good as Bob Dylan lyrics. You know,
we're not going to get into that again, are we?
Barrett made a Dylan reference already and earlier before we got you on the line. And I was going to mention, we forgot to mention this when we saw Cloud Cult on Friday night. They played the cover of, what was the song they did a cover of?
Mr. Dylan. Tambourine Man, I believe.
Yes, Mr. Tambourine Man. And you had some kind of crack right at me on that.
I just turned around and I said, isn't this the tallest man on earth?
Yeah.
And then another person we were there with, Steven, didn't have, he wasn't privy to our little inside joke, but it was still funny. So that was a good crack.
Yeah,
even out of context.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Somebody laugh.
That's like a multi joke. That's good.
Works on different levels.
Yeah. Very good. So, all right, I think that's a pretty good taste of Boxer the Horse. They kind of sometimes they rock a little more, sometimes they're sensitive, but I think they're a pretty decent band that not many people have heard. So maybe a few more people should listen to them. And let's go back to Chris and tell him to give us his views on the Guns N' Roses Appetite for Destruction album. We just talked about how it's the 25th anniversary and Barrett thinks it's terrible. And, well, I won't repeat my comments, so, but I had some. But we were like, we mentioned the fact that we remembered that you have actually gone to see, like, Guns N' Roses tribute bands.
Right? Yes. not only one, several. I believe there's one called Mr. Brownstone,
which
I remembered
that up. Yes.
Because you have to be named after
heroin
one of the songs.
Right.
Was there a band called Paradise City?
Paradise City was the other one. Yes, Paradise City was really good.
Yes.
that was the band where it was a Bon Jovi cover band and a Guns N' Roses cover band. So we go to see both, and it turns out this band comes out named Paradise City and plays all the Guns N' Roses songs.
Yeah.
They walk into the dressing room.
It's the same
come
guys.
Out dressed as Bon Jovi and do all the Bon Jovi songs. So it's the same band.
Yeah.
That's the guy was a much better Axl Rose than he was a John Bon Jovi, I must say.
Yeah, that's I could sit through at least some of a Guns N' Roses band, but not a Bon Jovi. Oh my God, no, I just couldn't do it.
Well, back in 1987, when or might have been 1988, when Appetite for Destruction came out.
It was 87, 25 years ago.
Yeah, there was this girl I was very very into at the time. I was 14 years old, kind of one of my first loves. I called her on the phone, and she was talking to me about being at the beach all day, and she's like, her older brother had just started listening to this new album. And she played a little bit for me over the phone, and you know it was really tinny, and I couldn't hear anything. But it was the opening part of "Sweet Child of Mine,"
yeah.
Which is the first way that I'd ever heard Guns N' Roses. So,
so this always is just it's music to Chris's ears. This is right here.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever he hears that, it's just like, you know, we were at our band music practice a couple months ago, and the. One of our guitar players had just gotten this Gibson guitar that can make that sound. Mm-hmm. So he starts playing that. And then I'm like, hey, I'll do this bass part. I was pretty much doing this thing, this bass thing. Now, isn't that a classic?
Yes.
How can that not put a smile on your face, you know?
Always. the remainder of my life, just hearing that takes me back to being 14 years old. And
yeah.
That same feeling.
Yep.
You know, I don't like the idea of Guns N' Roses, but I've never even heard that album. I'm going to say I don't guess it because so why would I? But I've never heard.
You're getting cut off, but I believe you just said that you've never actually heard the album, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't need to. You got to just stake your positions on things, whether or not they're informed, right?
Yeah. Maybe sometime you should just decide to listen to it,
quicker.
Though. You'll be like, maybe you would think, hey, this is from that album. You know, I've heard this and I never realized it.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know.
Well, now that you have Spotify, yes, now is the time to listen to that album back to front. It's a classic.
The thing is, I was telling Barrett this earlier. I still like them better before Axl Rose starts singing. And then when he starts singing, I just like, I can't help but picture him, and then I think of like this. Just it's just a complete turnoff. I mean, the guy is like, okay, for that 1 year or 2 year period that it was kind of cool, you know, to have that attitude. But then it just like it wore off, and then now like he's just old and he's fat and he's just a total jerk. And you, anything you read, it's just and so I can't now. I'm like, I can appreciate the musical part better than the you know when he sings.
Well, when you think about positive. Popular music in the late 80s. I mean, it was really moving towards glam metal, towards, you know, Poison and Motley Crue and, you know, all these guys with big hair and stuff. And
yeah,
they really transformed things at the time. I mean, their songs are about doing a lot of drugs, getting drunk and driving around, you know, smacking women around and stuff. And it was a pretty drastic change at the time.
So I had this wrong, because I was thinking that Guns N' Roses was kind of the end of that hair metal era, but maybe some of that Cinderella Poison stuff actually came after. Did that come after Guns N' Roses?
I think most of them were trying to hang on after Guns N' Roses, but it went almost right from Guns N' Roses to grunge.
Yeah, it went to Metallica. It went to Nirvana a little bit, you know, and then Metallica became the new metal, right?
Yeah. Well, Metallica was around. I mean, the hardcore people loved them in the early to mid 80s.
Yeah, I guess so.
But they really sold out in 91 with the Black Album, and that's when they became, like, you know, world famous. So, but yeah, they were all part of that almost at the same time.
Yeah. Well, all right. I think we've covered the history of rock and roll now in a little over an hour.
Exactly.
So, good. I'm glad we were able to piece this one together. So now I get the work. Now I have to edit all these 5-minute blank spots where we're cutting each other off on Skype and stuff, but I'm up to the task.
Now you're opening the curtain and revealing us to be. I think people imagine that we're just ripping these nuggets off without any pauses or any flubs.
It's usually like 5 minutes between comments. We just sit and nobody says anything, and then finally somebody thinks of something to say, right?
Right. We have little meetings. Like, we'll say something, and it's like, okay, guys. Chris, we have Chris here. What can he say? And then we'll write it out and rewrite it and kick it around.
Yeah.
That's the day to do one of these things.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, you guys. We'll come up with something for the last podcast before the Will's Band of the Week summer break. And so everybody listen to lots of music so that we have something to talk about. And as I mentioned earlier, I got a whole bunch of things in the kind of in the pipeline that I haven't quite deemed whether they're podcast worthy, but we can always rattle off a bunch of stuff. There's a lot of music that's been hanging on out there for a while, just not anything big, right? There's been a lot of stuff in it. Kind of, there's a lull in the big names, of indie rock, if there is such a thing.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, Chris, thanks for kicking all the kids out of the house. I
cleared them all out.
That was another behind the scenes. Imagine, like, Chris, what he was doing. You know, listen, you kids, I have a podcast to record. Get the hell out of my house. Or something like that, probably. Right?
Yep, exactly that.
Yeah. So, all right. Time to sign off. Let's say, even though it's day, I think we should call it good night because it just seems right. So we'll be back again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good
night.